ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So what I learned in Bengal part 2. Yeah, this is relevant to Almvigsgard. Sorry if I pronounced it wrongly. What does it mean, Almvigsgard? Gard means garden, by any chance, garden. Oh, it's a bolt from the blue. And Almvigs is the name of a person or what? It's a certain tree, so it's a elm tree. So it's a grove of elm trees, or it was at some point in time. And Korshnas, what does that mean?
Cross.
Oh, it's a garden at a crossroads, is it? So it's like a peninsula?
Yeah, something.
And it gets its name from that. Okay. So, Jayadvaita Swami, he also mentioned that he was traveling with the Padyatra in the early days of the Padyatra. It means from about maybe in 1985. And he noted, I believe it was in one Back to Godhead article, that devotees, they often wonder about Varnashram and how to establish it, but you can learn so much just by seeing how the village life operates in India. Actually, the old system's broken down because of the money culture. I was thinking to speak about that as a follow-up, part 3 of this discussion. But the way in which people live, rise early. Of course, in India, it's easier to rise early because it's generally quite warm. Whereas here, I can imagine people just like to stay in bed when it's dark and cold. When it's warm and you sleep under the stars, and then it's just a normal thing to rise early in the morning. Of course, in North India, in the winter, it's quite cold also. But that culture is there to rise early, and then everyone goes about their work, and everyone's work is interlinked. There's the barber and the washerman and the potter has an important function to play because pots are needed. Well, little clay cups for drinking are required all the time. Use and throw it away. But it's ecological, because it merges back into the earth. And then pots are required for yagyas, if people do yagyas, not in Bengal much, that kind of yagya. And some people cook with clay pots. That's considered the best cooking medium, clay pot. Use it once, just like a Jagannath Puri, you see all the... You get the pots of prasadam, so then it's given, it's offered like that, and then it's cooked in the pot, it's offered, and then it's given out to the public. And some potters, they make deities also. There are 13 pujas in the year. So the deities, they worship during the puja, and then they're put in the river. So the potter is there, the weavers are there, the blacksmith is there in a bigger village, or who makes pots and tools and things like this. So you can see how that culture is there. But It's an economic arrangement, but it's a social arrangement also. And it's all meant for the purpose, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Chaturvanyang Mayashrishtam Guna Karma Vibhagasha. He makes these different groups of people, and then Sve Sve Kamanya Bharata Sang Siddhim Labhate Nara. That by performing their work, people think, oh, this caste system is very bad, people aren't equal, but everyone has an equal opportunity to please Krishna. So that's the whole point, by your work to please Krishna. Atah, what is that? Atah pungsa, what is that? Atah pumbhya dvija shreshtha vanashrama vibhagasha. Swanushtitasya dharmasya sangsitim haritoshanam, that everyone's supposed to work for Krishna. So, Srila Prabhupada wanted to make these farm communities, and the idea is that everyone does their work and chants Hare Krishna, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, that Nama shroi kori jatane tumi takaha apana kaje. Whatever work you're doing, do it, but take shelter of the holy name. So, I realized after some time that I had a lot more to learn from these people than I thought I was going to go and teach them. I was supposed to be preachers. And yes, philosophically, in many ways, Srila Prabhupada's teaching them in many upper sampradayas, the wrong ideas. And we have to teach the people to perform sadhacha. But in many ways, I had so many things to learn from them. So this idea that in the West we have a superior culture, that's the whole justification for the British planting their flag all over the world, that we have a superior culture and we have to civilize these people. And still that idea is going on, this arrogance or condescending attitude that, well, America has to go and invade Afghanistan and Iraq for their own good. We're doing it to help the people, to establish democracy. So that same attitude is going on, but actually we have so much to learn culturally, apart from the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. We have so much culturally to learn from India, even though the culture is going down due to Western influence. So I recommend that for young men. Especially for young women, it's more difficult, but for young men, devotees, that if they can spend some time in India, not just visiting the holy places, which Mayapur and Vrindavan are like Western outposts there. So you can go there and hardly realize you're in India at all, apart from the heat. But the Western devotees tend to congregate among themselves and have their own way of life. But if we go out and mix with the Indian people, and of course, it's not that everyone in India is a saint. Kamsa was also born in India. And there are still, his representatives are still there, but we tend to, in our activities, we tend to move among or attract the more pious people. So it's a good education to live among them and to absorb the culture and the subtleties of that. So, yeah, I recommend that any young men, especially before they get married, or before a man and wife could go before they have children, and just see how people live. Of course, there is much propaganda against Indian culture. There was also a deliberate part of the British plan to subvert India, and that's still going on. Just like if there's a riot in India, it's reported in the Western press that, you know, a riot in India, you know, what can you expect from those people? That's the kind of attitude. And if there's a riot in America, it's like, well, that's very unusual. So it's that attitude that we are civilized and these people are not civilized. But although India in the present time, in Kali Yuga especially, is far from perfect, there is much we can learn. And my understanding after living there and attempting to practice Krishna consciousness is that, as Srila Prabhupada many times said and wrote about this, that it actually is a very superior culture to the one that we in the West have been raised in. It's conducive for God realization. It doesn't deny that there are secular aspects of life. There's dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. And out of these, artha and kama, economic development, and sense gratification, are secular, to do with this world. And dharma, as practiced in this world, is at an interface of this world and the other world. And moksha is meant for liberation. So it doesn't, without denying the secular aspect, it's clearly the focus is on, or the ultimate purpose is spiritual life. And people who dedicate themselves to that are respected for doing so, because it's understood that this is the best way to be, or the best thing to do. It used to be like that in the West also, that the people who are dedicated to religious life were respected. But that's changed now. So, this I had some realization of the superiority and the dignity of that Indian culture, and especially in Bangladesh, where the Hindus, the main thrust of their culture is worship of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he came to reveal the sweetness of the Absolute. The Absolute is not only not impersonal, but he's also a very sweet person. So the Bengali culture is a very sweet culture. Of course, it's not, again, it's not that everyone's a saint. But sweetness is appreciated, not only in the food. Bengali sweets are famous all over India. Although there are sweet shops and sweets, that's also an important part of Indian culture. Indian people eat more sugar per capita than other people anywhere else in the world. So it's a sweet culture, literally. But Bengali sweets particularly are famous. But there's a sweetness, the idea that, or the understanding that religion is not something overwhelmingly grave, but it's overwhelmingly joyful and sweet. I remember the opening of the Delhi temple, which Atal Bihari Vajpayee, who was the Prime Minister of India there, came to open the temple, which was, it's a big thing. The Prime Minister of India is a big position in the world, and he came and opened that. Actually, this is getting off course a little bit, but when he was a not very high member of the, what would it have been at that time, the Janata Party or whatever. It would have been the Janata Party. In Bombay, he used to come regularly to the ISKCON temple and take prasadam. And Prabhupada at the time said, look after him nicely. In future, he'll be a very important person. So he went up in the ranks and became the Prime Minister of India. So in the souvenir that was issued, he gave a written message. And he said, and we trust, something like this, we trust the occasion will be observed with all due solemnity. So that statement is imported from British culture, that some religious function should be celebrated with solemnity. Know what this word means, solemnity? It means solemn, it means very, try not to smile here. It means very grave, it's because just like in the church, you should be very grave, and smiling is not allowed. Although I did see yesterday, someone sent me a link that at a wedding in England, the priest, who was a woman, led the dancing disco style in the church at a wedding. And devotee who sent it to me said that we're just waiting, when is this going to happen in ISKCON? Because we seem to be going the same way. So that struck me that he said the solemnity, that's an idea imported from British culture, that religious functions should be solemn. But in Vaishnava culture, especially Gaudiya Vaishnava culture, religious functions are expected to be happy. That's a festival, bliss, dancing. So sweetness and happiness and pleasure. Maybe that idea comes from the British idea that everything should be solemn in religion. That comes from the puritanical idea. The Puritans, that would be 16th century England. They had the idea that they should, to worship God, you should have no pleasure whatsoever. You should wear black clothes and don't smile and don't have nice food, and everything should be very plain and simple, which is all right for renunciants to be renounced like that. But the whole idea that religion is something, and the music in the church, if there's any music at all, it should be very grave and solemn. But Krishna is worshipped by song and dance, flowers and bright colors and paintings and nice food, everything nice for Krishna. So that reflects in the culture also. That's the that was my understanding. This is the best culture. So these communities are meant for showing people how we can live simply, happily, joyfully, and even materialistic people can understand that. In these farm communities, we have something that people living in the towns can never get, however much they pay, as long as they're living in the town, which is fresh air, fresh food, fresh water, and from this should come a fresh mind also. However much you pay in the city, you can't get food as fresh as you get in the farm. Maybe a little bit you can grow on your roof or something like this, but not that it's all so fresh and nice. So we want to show this, that simple living is possible. It's conducive for higher thinking, spiritual life. Man is not meant simply for laboring. And simple living means that if we don't have machines to do all the work, then we have to work together. So we don't have to have seminar after seminar about relationships. We just all work together, and then automatically relationship comes. We can also, one thing I saw in Bangladesh is seeing how much the earth can support. Mother Earth can support, as Srila Prabhupada said at that time, 3 times the present world population. The earth will give. Although Bangladesh is a very, very densely populated country. Actually, if you move in the country, you won't see lots of people. But what you'll see is the typical Bengali countryside is most of the country is flat. Rice fields, mostly rice fields. Other crops also, mustard is an important crop there. So many other crops. But rice is the staple food. And then you'll see some raised earth in the middle of the fields with all trees. And you don't see any houses. But if you go inside that, the earth which has been raised, it's raised because of floods. If you go in there, and you'll see within the trees are so many houses, and within the houses are so many people. So, except in the cities, you don't see a lot of people, but it is densely populated. And the earth is supporting. Mother Earth is supporting. So the earth can support. And many devotees, when they start to grow their own vegetables and everything, they're surprised how little piece of earth you can get so much produce. Mother Earth gives. So yeah, hospitality, I spoke a little bit about yesterday. How one thing happened, I told you yesterday that our devotees, they came to Sweden and Denmark and later Norway for collecting, for purchasing some vehicles. So they purchased four Mercedes vehicles, four Mercedes vans, two for Nepal, two for Bangladesh, and drove them over land. So we had two such vehicles in Bangladesh. And what happened is, in one village, one vehicle got stuck in the mud just at the beginning of the rainy season. It's a long, heavy rainy season there. Just over the border with Bangladesh is Meghalaya, which is a small state in India. Megh means cloud, and alai means place of, just like Himalaya means the place of ice. Vidyalaya means a school. So Meghalaya means the place of clouds, and that place has the highest rainfall in the world, and it only comes 4 months in a year. So when it comes, it comes. So Bangladesh is right next to that. There's a lot of rain, and it comes mostly in 4 months. There may be some other rains throughout the year, but mostly in the 4 months of the rainy season. So just at the beginning of the rainy season, the vehicle got stuck, the clutch got burned out or something, trying to drive it out of the mud. And they were stuck in the mud, and they couldn't go anywhere because all their paraphernalia was in the vehicle, and it's very difficult to move around when everything's all muddy and flooded. So to get the spare part, we relied on Prabhu Vishnu Swami, because he went overseas, and he went back and forwards, because you couldn't get the spare part just anywhere. So, and he wasn't going to come back till after the rainy season. So the party was stuck in the village for 4 months. And the people in the village, they just looked after them and for 4 months. They're not rich people, but they fed them, and they just thought, well, it's just, people have come, and they're here with us, so feed them every day. Fed our whole party. There are about seven devotees on the seven or eight. Feed them every day. And devotees would have kirtan 3 times a day, and everyone was happy. But the idea, you've been here too long, get out of here. There's no such thing. They couldn't imagine. It's just not part of their culture. If someone comes, you can't throw them out. So, hospitality, gregariousness. Another part of the culture is respect for seniors, whereas in the culture that I grew up in, we used to, I'm sorry to say, but I was raised like that, we used to mock old people, saying, they're just useless, or the old people are useless. And actually, in a culture that's based on sense gratification, old people are useless, because they can't produce anything, and they can't enjoy anything, and they just consume with nothing to give. So according to the standards of Western culture, maybe euthanasia is a good idea. Just kill them. And maybe you could eat them also. Healthy food. But in Indian culture, people by age, they are appreciated and respected. And until recently, they were looked after, although that's mostly they still are also, but that's changing with the modern way of life, unfortunately. So people don't have to be in anxiety. What will I do when I get old? Who will look after me? Just as they looked after their parents, their children will look after them at home. And so it quite often happens that people, they get old and they get sick and they remain like that for 20 or 30 years, just in a incapacitated or semi-incapacitated state, but just people go on serving them. That's all. And they have to follow them, what they say. Because the idea that those who are elder, they have that right and they have that wisdom, and you have to follow the parents. That idea is very much this inculcated by Ramayana. Actually, Ramayana, Mahabharata, especially Ramayana, how one should respect the parents. Although I think in modern culture there's not much idea of respecting parents. And in Sweden you don't even have parents, I was told. Legally, you don't have parents. There's no such role as a parent. That's what I was told. Is it? Well, someone told me that it's called guardian number one and guardian number two, something like that. It may not be true. All right. I guess that's to avoid the embarrassment when one child in the class doesn't have two parents, they only have one parent, or they have a stepfather or something like that. I guess that's the idea. And literally, in that case, people, many children in the West don't grow up with, they don't grow up with both of their biological parents. It's a very normal thing that they grow up just with their mother or with their mother and a stepfather or a series of stepfathers like that. So, what else to say? Slow life, no big rush. As I was saying yesterday, it's not that if you work more, you can make more profit. It's, or that there's any business to do. Someone may have a business in the village. They have a small shop selling matches, kerosene, maybe some biscuits or something which people buy on some special occasion, if there are some guests or something like this. Although mostly it's this kind of thing, biscuits, people didn't buy. They'd have a big can and they'd make some snacks which are available at all kinds of different things, salty, mostly salty. How to explain them? They're little things made out of chickpea flour and mixed with some peanuts and some chipped rice. Chira, yeah, that's one of them. Farsan is the, is it? That's in Hindi, is the general term for salty snacks. Churwa, yeah, that's one kind, but there are so many. So that's there for kids if they're hungry and the food's late, or for guests who come, there's always something like that. But there's, you can't have a big business in a village, however much you made it. But people also, people are less materialistic. One reason is because there's no TV telling you buy this, buy that, your life will be better if you use this kind of shampoo and so on. And also there's nothing there to buy anyway. And I saw that in Russia, that until recently, people weren't materialistic. in the same way they are in the West, because they're not part of a consumer society. There's nothing to buy. When I first went there in 1986, we saw people had money, but there's nothing to buy. So it wasn't much use having any money. There's a limited amount of things to buy. So this idea, produce more and then buy more and get more things, if that's not there, then people tend to be much more peaceful. The main point of the main point of the Western culture is acquisition, earning money, enjoying sense gratification. In Bengali culture, if you want to make one word that's at the heart of the culture, the word is bhalobhasha, which means it's love, actually. Everything should be done with love. And that's not only man to woman, parents to children, children to parents, but among people. If you're here, someone may be criticized, oh, he didn't deal with me with bhalobhasha. Everything should be done in an affectionate way. The idea that the most important thing is that we interact with each other with affection. So that's very much central to the culture. Even if you do something wrong, it won't be considered so bad as if you deal with someone in a way which doesn't show affection. So, and even you'll see, I thought this was very strange to see men walking, holding hands, which in our culture that means they're homosexual, but in their culture it just means they love each other, which means not physically, sexually, but emotionally. They don't have any hang-ups about expressing that. The model of the whole idea of being a macho man and showing how virile you are and rough you are, there's no such thing. It's completely, the men are not meant to be imitating some Rambo or anything like that. They do what they have to do, as they have separate duties from that of women. Of course, often they overlap. But this extreme imbalanced masculinity is not part of the culture. So, at first I thought it was very strange. I thought it was almost, because due to my British upbringing, that because men would show affection to each other in that way, and they weren't super hyped up supermen types, I thought they were effeminate. But actually I just realized that later in the West, it's maybe not in Sweden, people are a bit more gentle here, is it? I don't know. But much more natural kind of culture. I often hear also Bhakti Vidya Purna Swami, he often speaks about this, how men have to be, it's not that they have to be like super wired up and ready to karate kick 50 people at a time, but to be gentle in their behavior. And the ideal of that is Lord Shiva, who's always very gentle, and if need be, he can be rough also. Better not mess with him. But generally, he's very gentle and calm. So he's considered the ideal husband. If I get into talking about the upper sampradayas, that's a big one, but that's the downside of it, or one of the downsides. Yeah, one thing is I couldn't understand how people could be devotees and they love kirtan and they like to hear about Krishna, but at the same time, they're not so very serious about chanting japa or getting free from the cycle of birth and death, not very much interested in philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Many of them, they'll wear neck beads, they'll have tilak, they'll do kirtan, they'll have their guru, their family guru, but they'll eat fish. And I couldn't put the two things together in my head. How can that be? I still can't, but it's because they're raised in that culture on which they have a natural attraction for kirtan. Actually, that's stated in Chaitanya Bhagavat, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he went to East Bengal shortly after his first marriage, that he blessed the people, that they would have attraction for kirtan. So that's still running on, but due to lack of proper teaching, people eat fish and they think it's quite normal, and they don't see anything wrong in that. So that's a warning for our devotees also, that it's not enough just to promote kirtan, but we have to very carefully follow what Srila Prabhupada and what Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who extricated the pure process of Krishna consciousness from all this mixed up with sinful activity, what our acharyas say, and follow the pure path. Because if we think, well, it's okay, as long as you chant Hare Krishna, it doesn't really matter what you're doing. And although here in the West, those who are devotees, mostly they don't chant Hare Krishna and eat flesh, but they have different anartas, fleshy anartas, in another kind of flesh, enjoying the flesh. So these are the two prominent anartas in among the Western devotees. One is sexual anarta, and another is intoxication anartha. So we have to be very careful of that, because if we think that, well, it's okay, that it doesn't really matter as long as you chant Hare Krishna, everything's okay. And then it came to such a point in Bengal that no one even knew that eating fish is not the proper behavior of a Vaishnava. They just think, well, it's normal. I had this experience. There was a devotee initiated by Jayapataka Swami, who was on our traveling party. This was in West Bengal. And I was mentioning something about fish eating, and he became angry. He said, oh, what's wrong with fish eating? You see, well, in our village, where I come from in Bangladesh, everyone eats fish. Our guru eats fish. That means his family guru. And we're Vaishnavas from birth. What do you know? So, because of not delineating what is proper from what is not proper, then they just think it's okay, it's normal. So we should be very careful in our ISKCON that we don't think that, well, everything's okay. As long as you chant Hare Krishna, everything's okay. But there is consideration of sadacha, proper behavior also. One thing I found very difficult in Bangladesh was one of the reasons why I didn't stay there, was the lack of intellectualism. There's a history behind that. I mean, intellectualism is not necessary for human life, but it just in this birth I had some exposure to that. So I feel the need for it, to discuss with people to interact with people at a, not everyone, and not all the time, but some intellectual life. So, historical reason for that, there's in, when India separated from Pakistan, and in East Bengal, East Pakistan, the majority population was just a little bit more Muslim than everyone else put together, than the Hindus, Buddhists, and Christians. Mostly Hindus. But the majority of the intellectual class were Hindus, and most of them, especially the intellectual class, educated class, they went to West Bengal. They left. And then and the Muslims also, mostly the better to do, but many of the Muslims left for India. West Bengal, Assam, all these places. And then during 1971, Pakistani army in East Pakistan at that time, they did a genocide. They killed as many Bengalis as they could, and especially the intellectual types, whatever intellectual types are there. And in fact, the last thing they did, on the day before they surrendered, they knew they were going to surrender, but they rounded up all the intellectuals and just killed them all. So there's a reason why, that's one of the reasons why at that time you wouldn't find many very well educated or intellectual people there. So that's one of the reasons I left. Just one other thing I've got on my list here, although I could take some questions also. You could. The attitude to life of just accepting suffering, that people are so much used to difficulties and disappointment that they just take it in their stride. Stoicism, this is called. That there was a terrible war there, and the Hindus especially, they are in an especially difficult position in Bangladesh. Not that, I didn't see that there's any particular persecution of Hindus, but in a poor country, those who are weak tend to get victimized. So I don't see that it was particularly victimization of Hindus for religious reasons, but just because they are a politically weak group, and so they tend to get victimized. So poverty, struggle, cyclones can just wipe out your whole crops. Now we have that word tsunami, and those times it was called tidal bores. Just after this Bangladesh Liberation War ended in 1971, just after that, there was a huge tidal wave which wiped out who knows how many people. Must have been several hundred thousand people. Because the population is dense, and the country, it's flat, and it doesn't rise much above sea level. So when there's a tidal wave, it comes in and in and in and in and just wipes out so many people. So many difficulties. But people just, they don't become bitter. I never met any bitter people. They just think, well, that's life. Somehow we're in this situation. We have to go on. One incident in our ashram in Dhaka, the capital, one morning, one devotee who was serving as the pujari there came to me. I was in charge of the ashram there. And said that I have to go home now. And I said, hey, okay, all right. But look, you're the pujari. Give us a day or two at least so we can find someone else to do. He said, no, I have to go now. So I said to him, look, just be a little reasonable, you know. Give us a day or two. He said, no, I have to go. And I said, why do you have to go so suddenly? He said, well, I just got news that our whole village burned down, so I have to go. It wasn't like he was lamenting, but our village burned down. So that can happen if they're wooden houses and they're all close together. So if there's a fire, it can quickly consume everything. So these kind of things happen. Boats huge boats that go down the river, carrying people back from the city to their village area. There may be several hundred people on board, usually overloaded. And then when a boat is overloaded and there's a storm, you can imagine what happens often. It sinks. So it's just part of life. There's so many difficulties, so much suffering, but they remain happy in it all, and they take shelter in Krishna or Allah, if they're Muslims. Even the Muslims we find are very religious. They would, very common in the villages, in the towns also, they'd have all night religious meetings, Muslims, Hindus, both. Muslims, very often, they'd have religious preachers coming round. And in those days, the Islamic religious preaching wasn't so much of this fundamentalism, but it was just telling people to be, to have faith in Allah and to pray to Him and all this kind of thing. So there's a few points. Any questions? Yes, please. Mm. Yeah, yeah. Srila Prabhupada was very interested. He was very keen, keen to utilize time. Well, Srila Prabhupada wasn't really like a Bengali in many ways. He was like an Indian, but in many ways he wasn't like an Indian also. It's very difficult to put any cultural stereotype on Srila Prabhupada. He took the best of Indian culture and the best of Western culture, I would think, for the sake of propagating Krishna consciousness all over the world. In his own personality. He did business. He was part of the modern world in India. He didn't play a traditional role. Of course, his father was a businessman also, but that was a traditional business, cloth shop. But Srila Prabhupada branched out into modern medicine, and it's not a traditional business, it's a competitive business. And as we are reading in the last few days after Mangalati from the Lilamrita, Srila Prabhupada, although he had very good ideas for business, but somehow or other it didn't click. And maybe that was Krishna's mercy on all of us. Should we follow Srila Prabhupada's mode of being punctual? Well, especially I was talking about programs in the evening, and the program starts when everyone comes. The idea is that we don't want to leave anyone out, and we're not in any hurry to go anywhere. So let everyone come in their own time, and that's a different approach. And it wouldn't matter if people didn't have to go to jobs. They could, for one or two nights, they could just sleep less and like this. It's a different approach to life. Economics dictates culture to a large degree. So when we have the jobs which have to be done, you have to go to a job, you have to be there on time, it just changes the whole outlook. Raising children, schooling children. Not much schooling when I was there. Not much need for it either. I mean, if your child is going to work in the field with you, then what does he need to go to school for? Or if he's going to be, say you're a fisherman and your child's going to be a fisherman, then what does he need to go to school for? I remember seeing the school, sometimes I get called in a school and there'd be like a little room with one teacher and about 50 kids all crammed in, all yelling and screaming. And so now there's, you'll see some motto on the back of the auto rickshaws in Dhaka. Send your children to school. That's there now. They have the idea everyone should go to school. Still not compulsory. In India, there's a move to make it compulsory now. And most kids go to school in India. One thing, this has got nothing to do with this particular subject, but all over the world, they're against child labor, right? What about kids who play roles in movies? Hollywood movies? That's child labor, isn't it? No one ever protests about that, maybe because they get paid a lot of money. But it takes away their childhood. Hmm? Sport, they get, but they don't play professionally at a young age, do they? In what sports? In tennis. Sweden, somehow or other, turns out tennis players, right?
His father is from Bangladesh.
Uh-huh.
But he can take very much, he can take free from school, very much.
Oh, I see, even in youth, yeah. That's considered acceptable if they play sport. I remember a few years ago in America, I was in a park, and there was a kid, a little girl, about 5 years old, and there was a man with a soccer ball throwing the ball, and she had to head it back like this, again and again, and it was all very serious. Okay, get it right this time. And like, it was very serious coaching, and the little girl was about 5 years old. So it's very strange. Oh. They make such a serious thing to train a little girl in how to head a ball. So they're against child labor, but certain kinds of child labor they allow. Otherwise they wouldn't have had their Harry Potter movies, right? And the guy who played Harry Potter, he turned out to be a crack addict. That's what he got. Hmm? Crack is a kind of drug. Super cocaine. So, anything else? Yeah.
You mentioned that the ghee was very precious for them. So that means, like, there are so many people that the milk is quite used from the beginning.
Yeah, mostly the cows in India, they don't give much milk. So ghee, we didn't get to see much ghee out there. Hmm? Why don't they give so much milk? I don't know. Should have asked all the farming people here. Maybe the breeds. Actually, someone did tell me recently that the breeds were developed mostly for working, for bulls. And the milk was considered a byproduct. But the obviously the cows give milk, but the breeds were developed for working, the bulls. So that's maybe one reason. Yeah, horrible culture. But actually in India, all the cows are killed also now, most of them. And in Bangladesh, it's a Muslim country. Cows have no hope. Don't have a what, sorry? Industrial story, yeah, that's why if you'll see on the Eid days, the Muslim festivals, better not go outdoors because they'll be killing outdoors, just everywhere, they're killing cows. Slaughterhouse civilization, that's another thing they're talking. There's so much protest against slaughter in Iraq, now they want to kill, go and invade Syria. There's so much protest against the Holocaust of the Nazis, but there's a daily Holocaust going on. Daily. Millions of, if you take all the cows, chickens, sheep, pigs that are killed daily. It's a daily Holocaust going on.
Glass transparent,
The slaughterhouses are outside the cities, mostly. They don't have it in the city. They have it in the city. Yeah. More pigs than people, huh? In Denmark. And in two cities, there's a big statue of a pig in the center of the town. I traveled all over Denmark in 1979. Pig culture. Oh, they're breeding elks to kill them now? Here?
It's the hunting period.
Oh, I see.
They stop now. So you see them walking around and they dance.
Yeah, that's Scandinavian culture, huh? Sweden, Finland, Norway. Hunting. Well, you have to get out there and preach. Distribute the books. Tell people. This is sinful. Hare Krishna. I plan to give one more as a follow-up, a more philosophical discussion of these points if I get another class here. I should do, I have another 3 days. Midday, yeah. But I want to speak on something else in that day. All right then.
Thank you very much.
All glories to Srila Prabhupada, who brought us all together, gave us this chance to chant Hare Krishna.